Well, welcome back once again. It's Jimmy B and TC here. 1700 KBGG is we're with you until 6 o'clock tonight. We kick off the 5 o'clock hour with some Hawkeye talk. It's our man Derek Peck from Hawkeye Heaven joining us, and our conversations with Derek are presented by Murphy Tower Service Apprenticeship Program. Still taking applications for that. Jobs available as well. It's Murphy Tower Service out of Carlisle. You can find them online at murphytower.com. DP, what is going on?
Not much. How you fellas doing?
Good.
Can you play basketball at all? Can you play?
You know what, Jimmy B? I quit basketball in like ninth grade. it was one of those things where I tried to wrestle, and my football coaches wanted me to keep gaining weight, and my wrestling coaches wanted me to lose weight, and basketball was never in the picture for me. But, you know, I will tell you, I'm gaining a lot of respect for you media guys now that I'm kind of stepping out there and in the media myself, especially as a Hawkeye beat writer, because this is the first experience for me where I'm understanding what it's like to try to cover a team that's struggling. I mean, they're really struggling in it. And it's a challenge in itself to put your head around it and put it into words or put it into writing, and just to stay motivated and focused and really really deliver.
Yeah, day in and day out, we got a show every day, and I got 4 hours to fill. Jimmy B's got a couple, and you got to find things to talk about. You got to find angles, and this team, it's been confounding just how it's got to this point. There were expectations coming into this year. As you know, Derek, we've talked about that. Roster construction, maybe that's the issue here. But frankly, you look at this team and you watch what's going on, they don't look like they're having fun. That swagger that they had a year ago, that is dissipated that they had at the end of the season. The question that we've been pondering, and Jim and I talked about this a bit yesterday, I want to get your thoughts on it. Is there a possibility maybe this group is tuning Fran McCaffrey out?
I wondered that. You know, I wondered that. And I don't know, you know, and Tyler Cook mentioned after the loss against Michigan, he questioned the effort of some of his teammates. I mean, he didn't do that in a direct way, but it was sort of an indirect, certainly seemed like an indirect, shot at the effort of some of his teammates. And I think Bohannon, you know, made the comment that they're not having fun. So, but that those types of things come with losing too. I mean, these guys are highly competitive athletes, and when you keep losing big games like they've been losing, it's easy to do to start pointing fingers. And I don't know. I think given Connor McCaffrey's situation, did you guys hear he had to have another surgery?
Yep.
Sounds like his. He had the surgery, of course, for the tonsillectomy, and then a couple days later had some unexpected bleeding, and they had to rush him into the hospital in the middle of the night. And I think if the timeline's correct, that was the same. It would have been the night before the Michigan game. You go clear back to Patrick McCaffrey having cancer and having surgery, and you also maybe have to wonder, you know, when you have that much personal going on with your kids, where's Fran's head been at? Too, because I know as an adult having a tonsillectomy surgery, from what I know, it's an awful experience, and it certainly sounds like Connor's has been a struggle. So, where's Fran's head been at? And I think it's fair to question whether or not the players are kind of tuning him out. That's a very fair point.
Hey, look, man, I had my tonsils out when I was 21. It was awful, so I can identify with what that poor kid is going through. I'm just curious, because we see a couple of glimpses where this team plays real well against good competition. I'm not talking about beating up on garbage teams like they did in the non-conference. That's meaningless. But against good competition, and then they'll go on an 8 to 9 minute stretch where they're just god-awful. Do you have a remedy at all for that, or how does this even happen that they can be that bad during that stretch and then look so good in another stretch?
Yeah, it's confounding. I don't know if I have a remedy. I guess there's two things that I would say. One, when we've seen them go through stretches where they play that well, and I think about the remaining part of the season, I think to myself, as a fan, right, a fan who tries to be optimistic and tries to look for the silver lining, I think that's what this season is starting to shape up. Two is just, you know, at this point we're hoping they can put together a full game and maybe knock off some good teams and make it entertaining for us to cheer for them when they're playing the best teams in the Big Ten. Maybe they can put it all together and get a big upset or something at this point, because I certainly think the NCAA tournament is out of the picture. You know, at some point you maybe the NIT, I don't even know if NIT's at some point could be a question mark depending on how many games they lose, but you know, there's that aspect of it. I we have seen them play well, and I think when they play well, if they can play well long enough, they could knock off some of the better teams in the Big Ten. But the inconsistency is a problem, and you know, I think the only thing I would point to, Jimmy B, is that Luke Garza. You know, I mean, that guy, he's had some big games, but his big games have been against really bad competition. And you know, that's one of those things when you're a big like he is, it's easy to pick on the little guys, and that's certainly what he's done against the inferior competition. But when it's come time to play legit opponents, he's struggled. And I think what you're seeing there is just an adjustment to the big time, and you know, big time Big Ten basketball. You know, I think it was Wagner for Michigan that just kind of. I watched him up and down the court several times the other night, and he just owned him. I mean, he lost his positioning. He gave up easy buckets. He got out rebounded because he just wasn't where he was supposed to be, which resulted in easy buckets for Michigan. And I think that's a big part of the inconsistencies is when they're playing, legit opponents without having an additional threat down low besides Tyler Cook, and then obviously. You have the inconsistencies that we've seen from the guard position. It's just it confounds into this these stretches of just complete incompetence where they go 8 or 9 minutes without scoring.
Yeah, frustrating, no doubt. Before we let you go, Derek, let's talk a little bit about the football side of things. Joshua Jackson, not a big surprise. He comes out with his intentions that he's going to be leaving for the NFL, and then this morning it comes out that James Daniels will be doing the same. He's going to be making the jump, as he declares, for the NFL. Certainly one that I think is a little bit more confounding for some out there, but it sounds like people inside the NFL love his athleticism, love the intelligence that he has, and going to get make money. You're going to play football 7, 8, 9 more years. Well, might as well get paid for all of them, right?
Yeah, you know, I think that they both made the right choice. If you know, it comes down to one of those. You know, as a fan, you've got to be able to understand that these kids are getting feedback from people who know what they're talking about. So, I think it's much more obvious in the case of Josh Jackson because it's been pretty well publicized that he's going to be a first or second round pick, and it's easier to understand why he would do it. I think. Like you said, the James Daniels thing is a little bit more of a surprise. Not a lot of people even knew that was on the horizon. That was a possibility, really, I think, until recently, maybe. Part of that's just because he's not a high-profile position. He's a lineman, kind of an under-the-radar position. But you're right. I mean, I think I can definitely see why NFL teams would love him. I think he has he was a little inconsistent. Certainly, but when he puts it all together, he was the best offensive lineman Iowa had on the field, you know, for sure. And yeah, I think we touched on it last week, but I think losing James Daniels hurts the Hawkeye team next year more than losing Josh Jackson, just because it was pretty well expected, and they've got a lot of great depth at defensive back. But they really could have used an anchor like Daniels on the line, and especially at the center position when they're kind of that quarterback of the offensive line making all the calls and the shifts, and they'll have to replace that. So it won't be easy.
Derek, we'll let you go on this. Nice win in the Pinstripe Bowl. Look, it was against Boston College, a team that wasn't ranked, neither were the Hawks. But you snapped that long losing streak, and you move on and finish with an 8-5 record. You good with that?
I am, yeah. I think in hindsight, I am good with that. I'm happy they finally snapped that losing streak. boy, the Big Ten the Big Ten kicked butt in bowls this year. Yep. So that was pretty cool to see too. You know, just as a fan of the Hawks, and you know, obviously we've got our in-state rivalry here with Iowa State. I've got that rivalry with my brother. It's just one more way that we can poke fun at Cyclone fans. You know, I mean, when the Big Ten goes out and handles business like they have this year. But, yeah, I think they've got a bright future, and that's, you know, I'd like to end it on a positive note, too, with the basketball team. I mean, I still love Fran McCaffrey as the head coach, and I still love some of the recruits he has coming in. And this is a young team, so I think that my hope is that they figure out a way to start playing together and playing with some aggressiveness. And, you know, one thing you can always do is hustle, so if Tyler Cook really, you know, I didn't see anything that made me think some of the other guys weren't hustling, but if Tyler Cook says that, then I you got to think he has reason to believe that. So they can always hustle, they can always play hard, and they got to play together, but they just need to focus on growing the rest of the season here. And with the pieces Fran has coming in the near future, I think that the future for Iowa basketball is really bright.
Derek Peck, HawkeyeHeaven.net is where you can find his work and a ton of great information up there as always, HawkeyeHeaven.net. Thanks, DP, for your time today. We'll do it again next week.
No problem, guys. Have a good night.
That's Derek Peck joining us here today as our conversation's presented by Murphy Tower Service. For more on the apprenticeship program, learn and earn. Check out murphytower.com. We'll take the time out here. Coming back on the other side, we're talking Panthers. Gary Rima, the voice of you and I. He's up next as we take you up until 6 o'clock on Jimmy B and TC.
And welcome back, everybody. We continue to roll right along here into the 5 o'clock hour as advertised. The one, the only, the longtime voice of UNI football and basketball. Gary Rima is our guest. Kaboom, Gary. How are you doing, man?
Well, we need some kabooms tonight, Jimmy B. I'm telling you what, they've been kind of far and few between here of late once we started league play, but doing good. We're in Springfield, Missouri, getting ready for an important conference game tonight and looking for that elusive first conference win of the year. So if we're going to get it, we're going to take down the preseason favorites on their home court where they've been almost unbeatable this year and they look pretty good. So we got our hands full tonight, guys.
Certainly do, and Missouri, we know, Gary, Missouri State, the program that they have, and Alize Johnson, if not the best player in the MVC, certainly right up there. Gary, what's gone wrong here? After they got off to the good start, Iowa State had opportunities in that one. It slips away in the second half. Xavier, the same kind of game, and then conference play starts up. They were still in such a good position, and now this 0-2 start. What's gone wrong during the four-game losing streak?
Well, I think our offense has let us down, TC, in the two conference games. I just, you know, when you only score 53 points, it puts a lot of pressure on your defense. Our defense was good enough to beat Southern Illinois in that home opener on December 28th, but with Spencer Haldeman out, that really hurt us. It gave us one of our outside shooters. They really packed it in on Bennett Cook in the lane. They just weren't going to let Bennett go off for a big night like he did in some of those big non-conference wins that we had. And we missed a lot of open shots in that game. Guys got shots, but just couldn't knock them down. And you could just see Southern Illinois' confidence throughout that game just growing from possession to possession. You know, and the crazy thing about that loss, they had a guard in Bartley, an outstanding player for them, he was suffering from back issues too. And it was thought he was not going to play in the game, did a chiropractic treatment prior to the game, did some other things, came out for warm-ups, and he was a game-time decision. But even Barry Hinson said he didn't really think he was going to be able to play. Well, Marcus Bartley ends up saying, I'm good enough to play. And he goes out and hit some huge threes for him, made four threes in the game, and helped lead him to that win. And Spencer Haldeman, our good three-point shooter, was in the same situation with back spasms from the day before, but he just couldn't get feeling good enough, just couldn't snap out of it so that he could play. So it was just a weird deal that game. And then I tell you what, Bradley put it on us. You got to give the Braves credit. They look good. Talking with their broadcasters after the game, they said it was their best game of the year by hands down. They played their best game of the year, and they look much improved. And again, our offense let us down. You're not going to win a lot of games with 53 points. And I thought for the first time this year, it cut into our defense, and we just, our transition defense just was not good enough. So it's not totally back to the drawing board, but I do think there's got to be some adjustments and maybe a couple of personnel things with minutes played, stuff like that, and a little tweak to the offense, and we can get back on track.
Gary Reim is our guest, longtime voice of UNI. Gary, before conference season began, Trent and I had a very good conversation about maybe the Valley might get two teams in. And one of the reasons we felt was the non-conference schedule that you and I played and had tremendous success. So that was there. And if they made a great run through the regular season and into the tournament and, say, maybe lost in the tournament final, their non-conference victories might be the catalyst to carry them in. Has that blown out the window already with the opening losses?
Yeah, it doesn't look good. Now, I mean, outside of, you know, rolling off 16 straight wins and mm-hmm. winning a couple of games right away in the conference tournament and maybe getting beat in the finals, I don't know, maybe something crazy like that, we could start that talk up and think maybe. But, you know, the thing is, our RPI has gone from a 35 prior to the start of the conference to 78. And when you look at the rest of the league, you've got a couple of teams in the 60s in the RPIs, but everybody else is pushing that 100 mark and higher. So you're just not gonna get games where you can pull your RPI down below 50 where you want to try and beat Jimmy B. So yeah, I think the two losses really hurt. You lost to teams in Bradley and Southern Illinois that were 150 plus RPIs at the time. Just doesn't look good. And I did think too, Jimmy B, I thought we had to split with Iowa State and Xavier. I thought we had to get one of those two, because really when we were sitting 8-2 going into our game against Iowa State, technically we were a 6-2 team because we had two Division III wins. So when they look at your record and your W's, we had six wins, not eight against Division I teams. And to lose both those games, I think that hurt us some. I thought we needed one of those, and then to start 0-2 doesn't help at all. So, you know, now it's a matter of, you know, righting the ship and seeing if we can't battle our way up the conference standings and then be playing our best basketball going to St. Louis, because it's looking more and more like that we're going to get a one team in. Whoever can win the conference tournament in St. Louis is going to be the Valley representative, and I just don't see where we can get a second team in.
All right, Gary, let's. I want to get your thoughts on Taiwan Pickford. The kid is an incredible athlete, but just still struggling with the shot. You know, we talked to Ben Jacobson. Coach Jake has told us that he's a good shooter. Is it a confidence level with him? Is there something mechanically that they're working on? And does it have a chance to turn around, or is that just something that more is going to be an off-season work for him and getting that shot figured out?
Yeah, I don't know if during this part of the season he's really going to be able to do a lot of correcting on his shot, TC. He can get in and get up more shots and try and improve a little bit there, but I mean, I think he's got some work to do to be the shooter at this level that you want him to be. But he gives you so much other stuff with his rebounding and his defense. He's going to get you some points, but I think with Wyatt Lohaus back and Spencer Haldeman healthy, I don't think they're going to ask him to try and do a ton of the scoring for this ball club now over the next, you know, 16 conference games. I think he's got a role to play. He's got to play that role. And, you know, I mean, he's shooting 35% from the floor and 21% from the arc. I just don't think he can be a guy you can call on to try and get a lot of your offense going. Just his shot just isn't that good right now. So they'll stay with him. They'll start him. He'll play a ton. He'll play 20 some minutes a game. But I think the offense has got to be picked up by Clint Carlson and Bennett Cook and Wyatt Lohaus, some of the upperclassmen. They're the ones that that have got to help this offense get going. And if Clint Carlson and Bennett Cook and those guys, if they start scoring like we think they can, I think some things might open up for Tywan Pickford at the offensive end. But I like his game. I like his attitude. I like what he brings to the team. But he just hasn't shown us yet that he's that shooter, that scorer that you want to have.
Having a conversation with Gary Rima here on the Big Talker 1700. Okay, so you referenced the big guys, and you indicated that their lack of scoring consistently is really what has hurt this team. Give me then the matchups tonight, and can your big guys right the ship in tonight's game, or how difficult will that be?
Well, either Alize Johnson or Obadiah Church is going to be called on to guard Bennett Cook, but nobody's going to guard Bennett Cook with just one guy, Jimmy B. They're going to shade him. They're going to hedge him. They're going to double on him in the post at times. So what's going to come down to is Bennett Cook, you know, inside out with the basketball. And I think Coach Jacobson was a little frustrated in the Bradley game to where when we got the ball inside to Bennett Cook, he did kick it back out, but then it didn't go back into him where he was open again. So I think you're going to see a little bit more of that, where it's going to go into Bennett. He's going to kick it out to the open guy and look for the ball to get back into Bennett's hands where he can go to work. Bennett took three shots against Bradley. It hit two out of three shots. He's a guy that's shooting about 60% from the floor for the game. He's got to get shots, and I think that's something that they're going to really work on. And then either Church or Johnson will get Clint Carlson. Clint's got to shoot the basketball, guys. I mean, at Bradley, he never took a shot. I'm still shaking my head over that. He needs to score. He needs to put up some shots. They got to find ways to get him the basketball where he can have some opportunities to score. But I think what you'll see tonight is I think you'll see, if you remember a year ago, Missouri State, they didn't even guard Juwan McLeod. They kind of let him roam out around the perimeter. And if the offense struggles because of that, I think you'll see Haldeman and Lohouse in there with Brown and Carlson and Cook or Pickford in there instead of Brown. I think you'll see a couple of extra shooters on the floor tonight. So if they're not going to guard Juwan McLeod and we can't get the offense going, they'll slide McLeod out of the lineup and look for Lohouse and Haldeman to be on the floor together. So when they kick it inside to Bennett Cook and it comes out, he's got shooters all over the place to kick it to. And if they stop doubling down on Bennett, I think Bennett can go to kind of have his way inside. So I think they've made some good adjustments just, you know, watching the shoot around and some things that they're going to try and do offensively tonight against Missouri State. But you got to put it in the hole. You got to find ways to score, and then we got to get back and play that good Panther defense like we did in wins over UNLV and UT Arlington.
Last thing for you, Gary Rima, the voice of the Panthers. You'll hear Gary tonight here on 1700 with the call with you and I down in Springfield. FCS National Championship game. We only got 14 football games left in this season. Yeah. 12 in the NFL, the FCS, and the FBS National Championship games. Give us a quick hit on that, and also a quick hit on the Panthers and maybe an outlook, an overview going into 2018 on the football field.
Well, first of all, for the FCS title game, I'm not going to bet against North Dakota State. I think they've got that revenge factor in their favor. James Madison is the team that ended their five straight national championship run by beating the Bison in the Fargo Dome in the playoffs. The only playoff loss at home that North Dakota State has ever had in Division I FCS football. Think about that. I think they'll get revenge on that loss last year in the semis. Should be a great game. James Madison has a great team. They're trying to defend the title they won a year ago. So I like North Dakota State. I just think they have a formula for winning. They'll play it that way, and they'll find a way to get it done on Saturday. I think the Panthers are going to be fine. Haven't lost any coaches, which is a good sign. If you can keep that coaching staff intact now that they've got a good understanding of not only the personnel but the league and what you're up against, I, with Eli Dunn coming back, I still think he's a quarterback that can do some special things this senior season. We've got a lot of our skilled players back. We get hit a little bit on defense, but, guys, I just don't really worry about the defensive side of the football with Coach Farley as the head coach. They're going to find players. They're going to build a defense that's going to be a top 10, top 15 FCS defensive unit. So I think the future looks good for you and I. Again, it's an extremely tough schedule next year. We just really have made it tough on ourselves when you play University of Iowa in your FBS game, and then you've got you got to go out to Montana and play at Montana next year, and I think we got Southern Utah coming to our place in a return game from going out there last year. So think about that along with playing the Valley schedule. But I think things look good for Panther football. I really do. The league will be good as ever, but I think Coach Farley's got us in a spot where we can reload and try and make a run next year.
Thank you, Gary, and we will be listening to you tonight on the Big Talker 1700. Thanks, pal.
All right, guys, we need a W tonight, Panther Nation, so late start, 8 o'clock start. Tune in right here, and hopefully we can call a Panther victory for you tonight. Kaboom that, guys. Just kaboom that right there.
Love it. Thanks, Gary. Have a good call tonight.
All right, guys, we'll talk to you later.
That's Gary Rima joining us. Our conversations with Gary Rima, presented by Washer Systems of Iowa. Jeff Egli, a UNI grad and a big hoop supporter. Power washers and a whole lot more. Washer Systems of Iowa. You can stop on out to their showroom at 6050 Northeast 14th Street in Des Moines. We're going to take a break here. We'll come back, put a cap on things on the other side. Ken Silverstein will be joining us. We'll talk some Big Ten with him. Cleveland. Yes, he's out in Cleveland, and the Brownies are having a parade. We'll talk about that with Ken Silverstein as we put a cap on things here until 6 o'clock. It's Jimmy B and TC.
And welcome back, everybody. Final segment here on a Thursday. We go to beautiful Cleveland, which is about 4 degrees warmer right now than we are in Des Moines. Ken, I'm just real curious here before we get into what the Big Ten accomplished in the bowl games. I just want to know, where do you have your for the Big Cleveland Browns celebration parade of 0-16? I know you're going to cover it.
Well, I got to go. Yeah, I am going. I had a buddy of mine call me today and ask me the same question, and all I heard was laughter on the other end. So that's not an encouraging sign, and they're predicting about 0 to about 4 over the weekend. So, yeah, it's hopefully they'll wrap up quick. It'll be so cold, no one will be able to talk, and we'll get out of Dodge fast. But, yes, I am partaking. Well, I don't know about partaking. I will be there, but I will have, like, 1 foot on the curb and 1 foot off the curb, hoping they – come on, guys, wrap it up. It's good. It's good shtick. I get it. Now let's go home and get into something that's heated and warm.
Cleveland, it's quite the place, and
yes,
they got the championship with Cavaliers and with LeBron a couple right. years back, but I know that the Browns are just so important. The frustration level, what's the temperature there? Is there hope, or is it we're just going to be awful forever? What does the fan base in general think?
Well, I've been here since 99. They came back in 99. And so one day I was sitting with a buddy of mine, and we figured out that average NFL game is about 3 hours. And we multiplied it by 16 games per year, and then we multiplied it by the number of years we've been back, or they've been back. And I think I'll stop there. I think you're catching my drift on how many years, or better yet, how many hours of our collective lives we're not going to be able to retrieve since we've watched these knuckleheads try to pull this off. I think, and I don't say this often, and Jim knows this to be the case, and I guess Trent knows also, optimism doesn't exactly pour out of my veins, okay,
right.
After all these years. I'm called around here the black cloud of sports. So with all that said, I'm going to shock you. I think the GM hire was a very good one. He's a no-nonsense, really don't care what you think about me. I think that's what got him in trouble with the Chiefs, quite frankly. But I think here he's going to have carte blanche. I think he can do whatever he wants. And with all the draft picks, I think this is the right guy. Now, the stupidity of keeping a coach that's 1-31, we need a thesaurus to come up with the right word or words to describe that move. But we'll leave that off to the side. I have faith in this new GM, and I think, without seeing the schedule, because it won't come out for another couple months, that they'll win at least a few games this coming 18 season. Now, what does that mean? I don't know. They're not going to go 0-16 again. They'll probably win 3-4 games. And around here, if you can win 3-4 games, they'll start building a statue for you.
Ken Silverstein is our guest here on the Big Talker 1700. Okay, so Sam Darnold, USC, announces he's coming out. The same for Rosen at UCLA. Do the Browns once again dip their hand in the pool, since they'll have the number one selection, and grab another quarterback? And if they do, who is it, Ken?
Wow. This has been debated and will be debated all the way through late April. I've seen both. They look the part. I mean, they have the size. They have the arm strength. They both have enough mobility. Darnold may have a slight more mobility. Neither one of these guys is Michael Vick of years gone by, but they're quick enough. They're able to move around in the pocket to buy themselves another second or so to get the ball downfield. If you're asking me at this point who I would take, even though he has given up vibes he doesn't want to play here, I think Rosen has more of an upside, more bang for your buck, let's say. I think the safer pick is Darnold, because I think he's the kind of guy, what you see is what you're going to get. So I think it's a question of, do you go for the home run in Rosen, or do you go for more, to use a baseball term here, let's say a double or maybe a triple, better yet a triple, for Darnold? And that's going to be Dorsey's pick, John Dorsey, the new GM. I mean, it's a tough one, because I'm not sure that there's a huge gap between either guy, and that's what makes this so difficult, because you could be wrong, okay, on this one. I don't think there's a huge separation. But right now, I would be leaning towards the UCLA product, and that would be Rosen.
All right, Ken, let's jump from the NFL ranks in Cleveland to the Big Ten football. The season is over for the Big Ten, an all-SEC national championship game. But quite the run through the bowl games, and of course it's Harbaugh that has to screw everything up and screw up the undefeated run through things here. What kind of positive is this? You know, it's fun to talk about for Big Ten fans, and you're going back and forth with a different conference you can do with that, but in the grand scheme of things, what does this mean?
Well, I think the east of the Big Ten is, if not the best division, I'd like to see somebody come up with a hell of an argument that right now that's better than, in no particular order, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan. I think Maryland is a year away, and hopefully keeping a quarterback upright, that'd be nice for DJ Durkin to have one healthy quarterback. I think Maryland is a team that, no, I don't think they'll ever get to the level of the big three or four, but I think they could be an 18 win type of club, seven on the downside, and that's pretty good. So, it's a very good division. 7-1 is nothing to sneeze at. If Harbaugh didn't have a metal flat tire and the quarterback play goes south once again, it would have been 8-0. South Carolina's not any good. I mean, we're going to talk about George Rogers from days gone by. I mean, South Carolina is very average, and I thought it was over, and probably everyone else thought, I guess it was, what, 19-3 at one point. The game was over. But Harbaugh made some very strange decisions. Quarterback play wasn't very good. They really can't run the ball. And he, tell you what, he's got to fix this offense. I don't like their offensive line play. I don't like their running game. I don't, for sure, like their quarterback play. And I don't know if Shea Patterson is going to be the guy. I don't even know if he's going to be eligible. And I can tell you one thing. If he's not eligible, with what he's got on the roster right now, he ain't winning the East. I can tell you that right now. He is not going to win the East if Patterson isn't eligible. And even if Patterson is eligible, I don't know if he's the answer. Ask me in November whether he's the answer. So if they're counting on Shea Patterson to be the guy, they're in a heap of trouble. Because right now on the recruiting front, which is really what it comes down to, I mean, you got to have the players to win the East. And he's being out-recruited badly by Ohio State and Penn State, badly. And I don't see what's going to turn it around. I think his shtick is wearing thin nationally, and there are some in Ann Arbor and elsewhere that are not pleased with what they're seeing. And I think if he wasn't a Harbaugh and he wasn't a Michigan guy, that he would get this fourth year. And if he didn't win 10 or more, and if not win the East, get down to the final game against Ohio State in the rivalry game with a chance to win it, I think he'd be gone. But he's Harbaugh. He's a Michigan guy. And this alumni base don't know any better. Okay, they just don't get it. Their attitude is he's the only guy on this planet that can do it. Well, that's short-sighted, number one. And number two, I'm not sure he can do it. I don't think he can do it. I really don't. I think Penn State and Ohio State are always going to be above him, and I don't know year in, year out. He's got to out-recruit right now Michigan State in his own backyard, and I'm not sure he can do that. So, tell you what, I'm glad I'm not their AD, because if he goes 8-4, 9-3 next year, and lands in third place in the East. Now, look, if he's in the West, that's going to get him second place every year behind you-know-who from Madison. But that ain't going to get it done in the East. And how many years is it going to be until somebody says, boys, money bag guys, this ain't working. This is not what we were counting on, okay? I'm not saying bring back Rich Rod or Brady Hoke or someone of that magnitude, but we're paying this guy a lot of money, and we ain't winning this division, and we're not going to the Big Ten championship game, and we're not beating Ohio State. We're not beating Michigan State. We're not beating Penn State. We can't even beat South Carolina. What the hoot is going on here?
Always telling it like it is. That's why we like having you on the show. All right.
Well, so that's Jim and Trent.
Yeah.
You can get away with it, and I don't even know in 2 years if you're going to be able to get away with it from a Michigan perspective in the West. Scott Frost is going to get Nebraska going. I know he is. I flat out know he's going to do it. If he could do it in Central Florida, he can do it at Nebraska. I'm going to give him a couple years, but he's going to get it done. I don't know if P.J. Fleck can do it. He talks a great story. The problem for P.J. is there's less players in Minnesota than there probably is in the state of Nebraska, and Nebraska's got a bigger rep nationally than Minnesota does. So you're trying to figure out who is going to make a run at Wisconsin, not once every 3 or 4 years, but every year. Is it Iowa? Is it Northwestern? Is it Minnesota? The team that's got the best shot, I'd say at this point, and maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, would be Nebraska. But they got to get it done. And right now, they're not very good. So Scott Frost's got a big job ahead of him. We'll see if he can pull it off. My guess is he will. I'm not saying they're going to go 12 or 13-0 like he did at UCF, but he's got a lot of things going for him. Let's see what he does on the recruiting ranks. This year is tough because he came in late. We'll see what he does in 18, or really 19, excuse me, 19, what he does in the 19 class. And I think we'll have a better idea of where Nebraska is going.
So let's move off the Big Ten for a moment and take a look at the national championship game.
Mm-hmm.
All SEC, we saw this before with LSU-Alabama, but that was also a rematch. This one feels at least a little bit different. I understand they'd love to have somebody from Big Ten territory. They'd love to have somebody from a different spot in the country. But what do you expect to see Monday night, Bama-Georgia?
I tell you what, take a step back for a moment. The Georgia-Oklahoma game was a classic. If you weren't rooting for anybody, okay, and you were just watching it for three, almost 4 hours, however length it went, it was pure entertainment, seriously. I mean, that's one you hold on to for years gone down the road because it was that entertaining. The game itself, I'll be honest with you, until I see Saban lose to, quote, one of his guys, in this case, Kirby Smart, that was a beatdown defensively the other night against Clemson. I mean, Clemson looked, I mean, they looked lost. I mean, they looked like they did on the Friday night when they lost to Syracuse at the Carrier Dome, when you could tell they weren't even interested in being there, okay? Mm. Now, the difference the other night against the likes of Alabama was they wanted to be there, but after about a quarter and a half, I think they realized, boys, we're in a lot of trouble here. These guys are really good defensively, and look, it's simple. Defense wins. I think Alabama will win. I don't think it's going to be, you know, the most entertaining game you'll ever see. It's not going to be high scoring because Alabama is not going to allow you to score 30, 40 points. And I don't think Georgia, with a freshman quarterback, is going to be able to do that. So I like Alabama. It's Saban's world. You know, when will the guy retire? Please, Nick, you're like 66. Could you just go out the pasture and let somebody else like Dabo take over? Because that's what's going to happen. When these Clemson fans, they don't want to hear this, but it's a done deal, basically. Okay, when Saban says he's had enough, guess who Alabama's going to hire? They're going to throw $8, $10 million a year at Dabo, and Dabo's going to leave Clemson, and then Clemson's going to look around and go, how do we keep this thing upright? How do we keep this at the level we're at? Good luck, Clemson. We'll see what happens. But, yeah, Dabo's sitting pretty. He's counting his money now. He's bummed because he got beat by Alabama, but he'll end up being the Alabama coach in a couple years when Saban hits roughly 70 and says, yeah, I think I've made enough money. I'm bored now. I think I'll play golf every day, enjoy Tuscaloosa.
There you go. Ken Silverstein is our guest. Quickly to basketball. You've got two lockdowns in Purdue and Michigan State for the dance, Kenny. I watched Minnesota last night. They looked really good at times, and then they let Illinois come back into the game, but still found a way to win. So I would say Minnesota will be there as well. But after that, who do you have?
Well, that's the problem, Jim, and that's Delaney's problem. The commission's looking at the same thing the rest of us are looking at and going, man, can we get back into football season, like, right now? Seriously. Seriously. Could we, like, speed? Look, I'm Jim Delaney. I have a lot of power, okay? I've made people a lot of money. Could I speed the clock up to Labor Day, get us through this 4 and 8 degree temperatures that we're dealing with, speed it up to September, Labor Day and kickoff, and let's talk football, because right now I got two teams, maybe three. I think Jim's right. I think Minnesota can hang and probably is the third best team right now. I'm not sure that's saying a lot, because I think there's a pretty good gap between one and two till you get to number three, and we'll put the Gophers there for the time being. Jim, after that, I mean, Maryland's got obviously a major injury to one of their key guys. Michigan's played better of late, even though they got a really bad loss to Ohio State a couple weeks ago when we were, quote, still in conference play. So that's 1, 2, 3. We'll go Maryland, Minnesota 4, Minnesota 5. I could see 5 right off the top of my head. And then you just got like 3 or 4 teams just kind of hovering, going, well, maybe we get on a streak and we can win a couple in a row and we can pick the right time to do it. And we pick the right teams to beat. Man, a lot of what-ifs here. Then maybe, just maybe, the selection committee will look at the Big Ten and go, yeah, okay, we'll throw them a morsel. We'll give them one more team. But, guys, I don't know. What, 5? Can you pick more than 5 at this point?
No. If the tournament was today, I think 5 would be the number. And it's not about conferences. It's about resume, and teams just have not built a good enough resume. And when there aren't a whole lot of good teams in the conference, it's hard to improve upon your resume. Going to be a wild
and
year.
And you think, Trent, these guys are going to be beating up on each other mm-hmm. now. Okay, yep. All these, you got about, I don't know, let me count them real quick. Obviously, you got the big two, and we'll put Minnesota, Maryland, and Michigan. So that's 5. So you got about 9 teams. Then you got a couple that aren't very good, so we'll take them out. So you got about 5 teams. that are sort of in the middle, okay, in no particular order. Let's say Nebraska, Wisconsin, Penn State, Ohio State, I don't know, Northwestern. All right, let's throw the Hawkeyes in there. They got to win tonight. Seriously, mm-hmm. They got to beat Ohio State. They cannot afford to go 0-4 in conference, or France going to be bouncing off the walls at this point. So, somebody of that 5 or 6 teams just can get on a roll. I'm not counting on it. Trent's not counting on it. I doubt Jim's counting on it. I'm not sure anybody's counting on it. Maybe the commissioner is like praying to the basketball gods that somebody in that group, and we're talking, you know, Iowa here, the commissioner's not prejudiced. He wants as many teams in as humanly possible. So in a private moment, he's probably thinking to himself, you know what, I really don't care who the sixth team is. Just please give me somebody that is viable with a capital V, that can be a sixth team. But I agree with Trent and likewise Jim, I guess. It's 5, and let's hope the fifth one doesn't fall off off the earth at this point.
And it could happen. Good stuff. Hey, as always, Ken, appreciate it. We'll do it again next week.
Look forward to it. Have a good weekend. Stay warm, everybody.
That's Ken Silverstein checking in with us. A look around the Big Ten NFL. We hit a little of everything there with Ken. So, Jimmy B, here we go tonight. It's the Hawkeyes and the Buckeyes tipping here in just a couple of minutes. Who do you got? Do the Hawks rebound after what happened on Tuesday night?
They should. I mean, they're good enough to beat Ohio State. But until I see it, Trent, I'll take the Buckeyes.
From what I've seen, from the teams that I have seen, it's easy just to go with Ohio State. Ohio State's made big improvements from what they were at the beginning of the season. I love Holtman, their coach. I think he's done an excellent job a lot quicker than I anticipated. But the point spread, Jimmy B, I'm a degenerate, and this is not with any black and gold glasses on. This is strictly, it doesn't match up with what our eyes say. There's something screwy with this point spread. I'm going to fade the public. Everybody's on the Buckeyes. I'll take Iowa to get it done tonight and end the skid at 3 in the Big Ten and finally get into the win column. With that, we'll talk about it tomorrow, Jimmy B. Back at it, 4 to 6, Jimmy B and TC. And starting at noon, myself and Ken Miller. You have a good night, Jim.
Sam, stay warm, buddy. Going to need it tonight.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have a good night, everybody. Enjoy it. We got you and I basketball coming up this evening. Gary Reimer with the pregame show. 8 o'clock tip-off tonight with the Panthers against conference favorite Missouri State. All here on 1700 KBGG.